Brilliance Audio presents Wildflower Hope by Grace Green, performed by Amanda Dolan. Prologue. My father, Henry Lang, died in June, 2 months after he and I moved to Wildflower House. People speak about grief and its stages: denial, bargaining, acceptance, and so on. I don't doubt the truth of it. In fact, it seems to me that just about anything in life, whether a disliked task, or recognizing you've wronged someone and should make amends, or even being wronged yet needing to be the one to forgive, goes through similar stages. We navigate and rationalize our way through life and death and all the in-betweens until the actual end, and then all the effort expended and pain endured in this life become moot, because done is done. Except for the loved ones left behind to pick up the pieces. I wandered through the high-ceilinged, near-empty rooms of Wildflower House and along its wide, lonely hallways. Over and over, I found myself in my father's room. His ashes, in a beautiful brushed pewter urn, engraved with his name and dates, stood on his dresser. Seeing the urn and myself reflected in the mirror behind it, I couldn't miss his hazel eyes. I had Dad's and Mom's straight dark hair, but those were surface features. There was so much more inside me that I'd gotten from my parents. Much that was good, but also much that was not so good, including a sad lack of self-confidence and a tendency to build walls around my heart and brain to protect myself. Dad died in June. His hopes and secrets perished with him, but he left me with a maze of unresolved questions and with Wildflower House. It was up to me to figure out what to do with them. Chapter 1. Kara? My name echoed along the hallway. I responded, "I'm in the kitchen." Nicole Albers strode into the room. She was an ageless sort of woman, slim, blonde, and always professional. She was about 10 years older than me, somewhere in her early 40s, but I suspected she'd looked much the same a decade ago and would into the next decade, too. She was carrying a large business tote and a handful of postmarked envelopes and ad circulars. She set her tote in a chair and waved the mail in my direction before placing it on the kitchen table. "I grabbed these from your mailbox. Looks like they've been there for a couple of days." "I didn't feel like walking down there yesterday." "Then drive to it. It's not a good idea to leave the box unchecked. Someone could mess with the contents, and you'd never know anything was taken." I answered her concern with a dismissive look as I moved the stack to the counter. "It's always junk mail, so I'm not likely to lose much worth keeping." She asked, "How are you doing?" "I'm fine." "Not." "How's the project plan coming along?"
"Project plan?"
"I know all about project plans. Did you forget I was a project manager in my previous life?" Nicole called my bluff.
"So you've set one up?"
"Not exactly." I shrugged. "It's early days. I'm still working from a handwritten list and a box of notes and samples." Something about Nicole looked different. It took me a second, longer look, to identify what. "You're wearing shorts," I said. She glanced down and brushed her hand against her shorts and thighs.
"Is it a problem?"
"No, you look great. It's just that you're always dressed for work. Ever ready to do serious business?"
"I am ever ready, but today I'm taking the day off. I didn't schedule a single appointment."
She looked around the room. "Where's that box?"
Sample complete. Ready to continue?